Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 280. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. It's about leadership. Today, we're going to talk about overestimating management, underestimating leadership. It's time to take a quantum leap, and we'll do it next. Quantum Leap was a TV series in the late 80s and the early 90s. I don't know how many years it was on, but this actor, Scott Bakula, he's now the star of this NCIS New Orleans show. He's the lead character in that show. I don't watch that show either. I didn't watch Quantum Leap either. I may have seen an episode, but I know people who acknowledge that it was kind of their introduction to that phrase, quantum leap. My earliest recollection, I think, of that idea came when a business owner that I was working for, he wanted to see what I thought was a pretty small increase in sales for some particular month. He had gotten us all together, and I don't remember. It seemed so incremental to me, and I did some quick math in my head as this meeting was underway. I was just a teenager, and I realized that the goal, it would be met if we just made an extra sale or two. I mean, if every member of the team just made like one extra sale, it didn't seem like a big deal to me. Early in my sales career, I learned how deceptive it could be, though, to calculate an increase based on, and if we only sell a few more of this and a few more of that, that strategy is fool's gold. But that's exactly how some companies target quantum leap sales growth. And it's exactly what this owner was doing. Well, it's what I was doing in my head as I was calculating, okay, so sell another pair of speakers, sell another turntable, sell another whatever. Sales is just one area of growth, though. It is likely the most important area for businesses, but it's something different when you're running a city government. It's something different when you're running an organization whose work is not based on revenue generation or profit generation, because then it's about getting things done. It's about getting things done efficiently, effectively. It's about winning friends and positively influencing people all along the way. And those can be insanely more difficult to measure. It's kind of like you know it when you see it, but it's really hard to tell somebody about it. Ask the sales manager with a product list of, I don't know, a few dozen SKUs. Ask them about elevating sales. It's easy to grab an account list, and then you go and stand in front of the troops, and you ask them to increase the sale of each SKU just a few units a month. Just a few units a month. That's all I'm asking for. Sounds reasonable. And in fact, it can sound ridiculously reasonable. I mean, if a company is buying 10 of one SKU a month, how hard can it be to sell them 12 instead of 10? I mean, come on, we just need to sell them two more. That's nothing. Now, do that across the board of, I don't know, let's say a list of 36 different SKUs, and suddenly you will pull out your Excel spreadsheet and plug the numbers in, and you will find that you have taken an account that did $1 million with you last year by just incrementally increasing their SKU count or the number of units per SKU. Well, you'll have doubled them. You might even have tripled them. And salespeople regularly will look, how did that happen? Man alive, we only increased each SKU by one or two units. But those dollars add up. And as reasonable as it seems, it's completely unreasonable because your 36 SKUs aren't the only SKUs that are sold by your client. I mean, they may or may not have the capacity for increasing the unit sales of your products. And maybe you've got a competitor who's selling better among some or among many of those SKUs. You might not be number one position in every SKU count. There's just a lot more to it than merely asking a client to buy a few more of this and a few more of that. Incremental increases in purchases by unit can result in quantum leap increases in dollars. That doesn't mean that you can achieve it, but you can sure make it happen on paper. And a lot of people get really worked up at what's possible on paper. Be great. It'd be great if our clients would just comply with our desires, wouldn't it? Unfortunately, clients have their own needs and they have their own constraints, and they're not coming to work each day to make your dreams come true. Man, if only they would get with the program, life would be better, wouldn't it? No, they're busy chasing their own dreams. Some organizations overestimate managing all the moving parts. And in this case, in these illustrations, it's inventory. It's inventory, whether you're selling it or whether you're buying it. It's managing inventory, and it's a necessary component for business that has inventory. They spend an extraordinary amount of effort and time on tracking the measurables that they think matter the most. In this case, the measurables happen to be inventory, unit count, dollars, open to buy. Now, I'm a big fan of data. The more the better. Well, provided it's accurate, and provided the conclusions that are drawn from it are true. But you know, asking a sales team to sell just a few more of this and a few more of that is really not only naive, it's unreasonable. And I think it shows a lack of leadership. We manage work and processes. We lead people. People get things done. And processes, they provide the vehicle to help people get things done. But a process, sans the people, it's not productive. I mean, even in robotics and manufacturing, people are the brains behind the process performed by the robots. Somebody's got to program these things. Now, leadership addresses the why and the how of it all. Why are we going to do whatever it is we're going to do or whatever it is we're planning to do? And how are we going to do it? The fact that McDonald's has crafted a process to deliver fast food in a predictable, reliable way time after time, well, that was leadership. And leadership is also part of training people to follow that process religiously so that the delivery is consistent each and every time. Management ensures that the process remains intact. You know, if the French fry machine is broken, the process breaks down. And management has got to kick in to fix that problem. We got to get the French fry machine up and running, and now. If the process isn't broken, but an employee is failing to follow the process, okay, well then leadership has got to kick in to fix that problem. Let's talk about the people side of things. I've seen sales managers task their team with selling more. In fact, every sales manager will task their team to sell more. Do better. We need to increase sales 10% this month. We're missing our projections. You know, all that usual stuff that hard-charging sales managers do. No examination of the sales process. No leadership in answering the big questions of why and how. No, just the admonition to do more, do better. I call it the mush management style. Just like those dogs in the, what's the famous race up in Alaska? Well, you know it. Mush. What you don't see is you don't see all the training that went into those dogs. It's not just somebody at a sled barking out orders or hollering mush, mush. There have been years and years and years and months of training. In my work to help leaders and executives become more productive, I'm unable to detach people from the process. I have experienced over the course of my career more than my fair share of economic turndowns, including the oil embargo of the 70s and obviously the most recent subprime mortgage debacle that, well, resulted in the crash of the entire world. When times turn hard, it's common for organizations to look at cutting payroll. People are often the first thing to go when the going gets hard, and for good reason. People are expensive, especially in a day when benefits comprise 30.5% of total wages, according to a recent U.S. Department of Labor white sheet. I mean, that means if you shave 70 cents off of payroll, you basically automatically shave another 30 cents in expenses for benefits. And if you don't have to look people in the eye, well, it's easy. You know, if you can sit in a corporate suite and you can bark out for other people to jettison a division or cut payroll so much, your hands aren't dirty. I mean, what's hard in doing that? No, I'll tell you what's hard. What's hard is to generate another buck. And harder still, dropping another dollar to the bottom line profits. And even harder is finding ways to save money in processes. But the, you know, great companies, they learn how to do those things. Just look at Southwest Airlines right here in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, who for years they have hedged their bets with fuel cost savings. It's that whole putting things on trial for their life. And I talked about that back in episode 266. 266, if you want to listen to that episode, about putting things on trial for their life. I'm a big believer in that. The people side of enterprise is commonly referred to as soft skills. And I kind of find that humorous because I think it's anything but soft. It's anything but easy. It's hard. I mean, sometimes it's hard because it's tough to measure. Harder still for some to be objective, and it's personal. You know, it's not some inanimate thing like a process or a procedure. You can sell an asset like a truck or a building or equipment. That's easy. You can lower inventory by not spending as much. Yeah, but you might risk lowering sales too, but it's still easier to do. People, man, it's anything but easy or soft. But people can be among the most profitable resources available to you because people make decisions. People have ideas. People solve problems. People make the difference. And that's why I emphasize leadership. Now, I hope to do it without minimizing management because I think both are important. But people are the ones who dream up. They're the ones who create. They're the ones who implement the ideas and the processes. And when things break, as they are wont to do in every business, in every organization, it's people who fix it. And sometimes the it that they fix is themselves or their own performances. I realize that I promised you an episode, and I promised that it would be this episode, on evidence-based leadership. But frequent recent discussions about leadership have compelled me to postpone that only so I could set the stage with how important I view people, which is why I'm doing today's show. It's a critical piece of the puzzle when we're sitting down at a kitchen table to assemble the 100,000 piece jigsaw puzzle that is leadership. People matter. Now, data cravers, and I'm one of those, I'm a data craver. Data cravers want to dissect numbers and measurable metrics. And don't misunderstand me. I love the measurables. I love the data. But I suspect, well, here's what I suspect. I'm really suspicious of people who want to claim the numbers don't lie. The data cravers who discount the people in lieu of the numbers and want to exclaim the numbers don't lie, tap the brakes on that. Because people don't always interpret the numbers. They don't always interpret the data correctly. Sometimes people go in with their own misconceptions and preconceived ideas, and it's like anything else. We make the numbers reveal what we want them to reveal. Conclusions are not always accurate. Just watch any NFL game. The NFL started this past weekend with regular season. Watch any NFL game and you will see numerous instances during any particular game of replay. And those replays, they're subject to rule interpretations. Well, who's doing that? Well, they're officials. There are either officials on the field or there are replay officials up in the booth. And the quality of the people, the officials reviewing the replay, they make all the difference. And so it is in your organization. The best performers increase knowledge and wisdom, and their experiences serve to make the organization better. Well, provided they're committed to learning, always learning. That's the key to improvement. What can we do to be better? How can our organization improve? How can I, as a leader, improve? The answers aren't easy, and they're certainly not simple, but they are doable. Every product, every process, and every workflow can be improved. Now, sometimes things just get too complicated, you know, and we overthink it. Have you ever looked at something in your organization and something that you're doing and you've thought, that's just more sophisticated than it needs to be? I'm guessing everybody has. I certainly know that I have. And sometimes smart people just worry too much about looking smart, effective, and efficient. They're frequently just plain simple. But we sometimes overlook simple because, well, there's something else at play here in leadership and in management. We want to look good. And sometimes plain and simple doesn't seem to look so good. About 10 years ago, I purchased a Dyson vacuum cleaner for my wife. Have you ever owned one of these things? Yeah, I'm that kind of a husband, by the way, a real romantic. Bought her a Dyson vacuum cleaner. Well, it was an expensive vacuum cleaner, about $500, as I recall. And that was 10 years ago. Well, I bought into the marketing that was and still is Dyson. I didn't do much shopping. They looked cool. The marketing, it sold me on the technology. So I bought one, no complaints. I mean, this thing had more contraptions and attachments than the space shuttle. It was magnificent, and she was happy. And it served us well for a decade now. Okay, recently it started giving us some problems. Suction wasn't as good. You know, multiple little issues, just nagging. And she began to complain about it. And so I set about to find a new vacuum cleaner. Now, unlike before, I decided this time that I was going to rely on some expert opinions. A lot's changed in 10 years. And this thing is just, it's got more moving parts than I cared for. I visited with some cleaning professionals. I visited websites that were filled with reviews. I looked at dozens of different models. And in the end, those cleaning professionals, those people who vacuum for a living, at least in part, persuaded me to take a look at Oreck. Well, now I'd heard of Oreck 10 years ago. And the odd thing is I didn't give Oreck a second chance a decade ago because of what I perceived was hype. Go figure. I mean, talk about a contradiction. I bought Dyson purely because of marketing, and I avoided Oreck because of perceived hype. Well, my lens, if one of them has got more hype than the other, it's definitely Dyson. And I'm a logical, smart guy. But that just proves that any of us can be goofed up in our quest to make an evidence-based decision. I mean, how could the Oreck be as good or better than a Dyson? I mean, the Oreck, it costs half as much, not even that. It's got no attachments. It's old school. And besides, you have to replace the bag. And it's got a belt. A belt? Who replaces belts anymore? And who uses bags? Isn't bagless and a no-belt system a better way to go? No, said the professionals that I talked with. No, said the vacuum repair shops. No, said all the people that really know a lot more about vacuums than I do. The Oreck is basic. It is simple. It is straightforward. That beater bar, it spins at 4,000 to 6,500 RPMs, depending on the floor that you're on, hard floor or carpet. It's driven by a belt. The distance between that beater bar and the bag, mere inches. And it's just a straight shot. The thing is minimal. It weighs 8 pounds. 8 pounds. The Dyson feels like you're pushing a car once you've pushed the Oreck. brand new, that Dyson never cleaned the floors half as well as this Oreck. Who'd have thunk it? All the fancy circular dust swirling around in that Dyson bagless dust container that you can see, so many parts and pieces and all that sophistication. Well, scrap all that. How about we make something lightweight, simple, and easy? Something that just happens to clean floors as well as anything that you could fly in space. Hello, Oreck, I'm talking to you. Don't confuse sophistication with effectiveness. Don't confuse sophistication with efficiency. I'm sitting across a business leader not too long ago, and we're talking about some of his people problems, including finding great talent. Talk turns to performance and getting things done, and at some point we chuckle at how simple we both view the problem of some existing team members. Is it really any more complicated than just doing your job well? I asked this leader. And he agrees that that about sums it up. Is it really any more complicated than just doing your job well? Easier said than done, though. Do your job well. Now, if you do your job well, it's no guarantee that you're going to have a successful career, because it could be that your job will become obsolete. It could be that the job is going to be replaced by a machine or some lower cost talent. But it could also be that your job needs to be re-engineered. The process might need to be revamped. You doing the job well doesn't mean the process, that actual work you perform, is best done the way you've been told, or the way your performance is being judged. I mean, the blacksmith, he may have been the best on the planet, but obsolescence took away his opportunity. So just doing your job well isn't really enough. It's also about improving the job, finding ways to get better and ways to make things better. It's that human touch that makes you valuable. Dyson may be taking a back seat only to Hoover in market share last time I looked, but Oreck is the new market leader in my house. And maybe it's about doing your job well, Oreck, or maybe it's about being able to tell your story better. Dyson. Bells and whistles, Dyson. Often Trump doing the job well, though. Oreck. It's true in vacuum cleaners. And it's also sometimes true in the workplace. And that's just another reason why evidence-based leadership is important, and why I think this little show and this preface, I hope, helps. Things aren't always as they appear. The person who claims credit for the idea may not be the person responsible. They just might be the boss, better poised to claim credit. The person doing their job well might be viewed unfavorably because the direction given was bad. But they were being good. They were being dutiful soldiers intent on doing their best, even if they disagreed with the marching orders. They marched, and they marched well. And we judged them accordingly. See, it's a fairly nasty business, this business of leading people. How can we determine who those best people are and what seats on the bus they should occupy so we can get that bus going where we want to go? Well, these are difficult challenges, and they're made more difficult by the murky water that we often get caught swimming in. Yeah, the murky waters of budgets and committees and customers and vendors and financial partners and corporate politics and culture and competitiveness and cooperation and demographics. Those are just a few of the many variables that face us every day when we arrive at the office. We don't do our work in a vacuum. Even our vacuum cleaners are subject to the elements. Doing your job well as a leader isn't about being right all the time, because that's impossible. It's about getting it right more often than not, and it's about seeing when we get it wrong faster than others. It's about our willingness to own it, to fix it, to get on with it. And it's also about making sure that we focus on the people during the work, because I've still never been able to uncover a reason for leadership's existence if you remove the people. It's the people. They're the reason that we do the work of leadership. That's when we just need pure managers if we got no people. Because people need leaders. Processes, they need managers. Quantum leap performance. The speed with which In-N-Out serves fast food, burgers, and fries, it's largely dependent on the process. Go into an In-N-Out burger. Look at their workflow. Watch them behind the counter. Watch them in front of the counter. It's important that employees are trained and held accountable to maintain that workflow. That workflow is important in that operation. Can that workflow be improved? Of course. Things can always be improved. But their people have to execute the process, and if they don't, well, customers get angry. And if the process is going to be improved, it's likely going to come from the people working the current process. They're going to figure out some things. They're going to figure out some tweaks. They're going to make some suggestions. Some might be really small. Some might be large revamps. But somebody is going to come up with something. The process will make the difference, but the people, they will improve the process. And that's where the quantum leap is going to happen. Figuring out a better way happens when people engage their brains and think. Brain power, creativity, problem solving. That's why my work focuses on people, because people are the catalyst behind improvement. People fix the problems. People, they find the better way. Great leadership. It fosters all the qualities that we need most in our organizations. Because great leaders make a big difference, not because of their own work product, but because of the work product of the people they lead. Because great leaders, they're busy every day knocking down roadblocks, flattening out speed bumps that prevent their people from doing their best work. They remove the bureaucracy and all the other constraints that bog us down. And great leaders fight. They fight to free their people to do their very best work. And so rare are these opportunities that even the novice workers, I have observed even rookie employees, they recognize when leaders are letting them soar with the wind of innovation and good thinking. Even those people that don't have any real life experience in a workplace quickly realize this is something special. This is something different. Because nothing trumps great leadership for employee engagement. Nothing. And there it is. That's the preface to evidence-based leadership, which I hope to do the next episode. Got some other things planned in the slow cooker. If you'd like to get in touch with me and give me some suggestions for shows, as long as the subject is leadership-based, just hit the contact form over at hirehumanperformance.com. Let me know what you'd like to hear a show about, and I would love to accommodate you. As always, Higher Human Performance is brought to you by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A Network, LLC. Bula Network is an executive coaching company focusing increasingly more and more on helping city government leaders do better, do well. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.